Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you.
And you too.
Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I'm really well. We were at a wedding this weekend.
I saw that.
Nick's brother got married to Francie. It was awesome.
Should I address now why you were dressed as a cowboy, but not like a real cowboy?
It was
like
a sheriff.
A sheriff that was like a costumed sheriff.
It was a Western theme.
Okay.
So
I'm surprised the bride let that fake mustache.
It was kind of her idea.
Okay. Well,
all right. She's all about it. And I asked permit. I brought it up. I showed it before we went in front of
all
people.
Right. Well, yeah, I figured as much on that. But yeah, sorry. So I interrupted you. You were at the wedding.
And so we get the guys up there, the wedding party, and we hadn't checked with the bride and her party before we started the wedding itself. And so we had like almost a 10-minute delay of the wedding, the guys being up front and the bridesmaid, the maid of honor and the bride not being ready at all.
Right. Wow.
Because we just kind of messed up that part. And so there's almost a 10-minute delay. And so I had to vamp. And I'm not really good at that.
But how many people were there?
Just like 35, 40 people. It was a small family wedding with some friends and family. So not massive. It was at a conference center. It used to be a commune back in the 70s.
Right.
So the joke that I had, because it was a Western theme, and so I was trying to remember Western jokes.
Because what every wedding needs is
more
a joke.
Cowboy
to start it off.
Well, I'm standing there. They're staring at me.
Oh,
I'm
yeah, that's right.
There.
You're vamping. I'm okay, vamping. Right.
And so we have like unknown amount of time.
Stretch.
And keep it rolling.
Yeah.
And so I say, so how do cowboys cook their food? Where do cowboys cook their food? On the range.
And how did that go over?
It had a like two-tiered response.
The there response was, like, was twofold.
There was like an initial almost gasp. Like, followed by
at the audacity that someone would tell that joke out loud,
like a warming of chuckles after that. And it didn't go past chuckles, but it was good.
Oh man.
So right before we started this episode, I threw something in the microwave and it's now been cooling. Uh-huh. So I was in line at the local Office Max, Office Depot kind of thing.
And brag.
They always have just things that you shouldn't buy,
right?
But you want to buy.
Yeah, the definition of the impulse item.
In the impulse items area. And so I bought some cake for us.
Some cake. So I saw little pouches that you had, and then you disappeared for the microwave, and then now they've been cooling in this bag. Let me move the water out of the way. Oh my gosh, the pouch transformed into a cup, and it's got a little face on it. Oh my gosh, look at this thing. Oh, they're still very warm. So this is a little, what's this material? Plasticky?
Yeah. So
plastic.
Plastic.
And so, I feel so faint. Oh, what camera am I on? Phil, can you see this? Okay.
And so you rip off the top.
Yeah.
You put it in the microwave for 1 minute and then you let it cool for several minutes, like 5 minutes.
And it is a pouch of brownie.
Yeah.
And
so
it
you've
says
got
nothing to add.
You've got a chocolate cake and I've got a lemon cake.
You got lemon cake.
Yeah.
Oh, they're still very hot. Yeah. So you just throw this in the microwave, I guess, is what you did.
Yep. And that's it.
And now we're going to taste them. That's not bad.
Not bad for a little lemon cake.
Not bad for something you threw in the microwave
for 1 minute
with googly eyes on it. My dad said that he saw prime rib for a at the dollar store. Little packages of that were just like bacon thin and like.
Oh,
and then now try the lemon one here. Oh, that's very lemony.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Not bad for a pouch. How much was each pouch?
Like $2. And but they've got about a year shelf life.
Oh, nice.
And so I was thinking, like, in our emergency kit, these would be nice
brownies.
Little special brownies.
Oh, yeah, totally. And just in case you need to really make your survival food stretch, this is 420 calories per pouch.
Note that I probably wouldn't have a microwave available.
Oh, yeah.
But if the situation were we had electricity but no water, for example.
I wonder what would happen if you just boiled it for a long time.
Oh, through the pouch in boiling water.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably not enough.
You just want to heat the batter inside, right? I guess it doesn't get hot enough.
Right. Yeah.
Should try it.
Okay. Mm. So, yeah.
Vamp.
So how do cowboys cook their food?
Wait, I do have something just for these pauses.
I am an actress.
Yes,
and I also have
a U.S. television personality.
Oh, I cut out the beginning of that one. That was you in the car trip.
I
breaking
am an
up
actress.
The silences.
And yeah.
Okay, let's move on to some. It is Labor Day weekend, by
it
the
is.
Way. And Happy I just came from outside, and are my arms tired? No, it is. There is literal ash falling out of the air right now, and I was out on the sidewalk, and I noticed that the smoke in the air from all the fires in Oregon is so thick that you could look directly at the sun and it was not too bright. And so I was asking you beforehand if that meant that the amount of smoke in the sky was equivalent to a welder's mask, you know, piece of glass or whatever. And you assured me that it must be at least close to that.
It must be.
A wildly stupid thing to say, I guess, is what I was getting at. It was not that. So that is nice. But, all right, let's get into some news.
Cool. So scientists have broken the record for the coldest temperature of molecules. They cooled them down to 50 millionths of a degree above absolute zero. So you take 1 degree and you slice it up into a million. And you take 50 of those above absolute zero. And
so, this is a daft question that I should have asked beforehand, but is absolute zero the lowest you can theoretically go?
Yeah. So by definition, absolute zero is the cessation of molecular movement or atomic movement. And because heat is measured as the amount of energy or the amount of motion of molecules, if you stop those molecules and stop the molecular motion, then there is no heat.
Okay.
And so the problem is stopping molecules, which seems ridiculous.
Right.
Using, incidentally, lasers and RF fields given off by lasers and those super cooling things, and they've got these two-stage. So what they do is they use lasers and magnetic fields. The scientists corralled and cooled molecules inside a device called a magneto-optical trap. Magneto-optical trap.
Huh.
In the trap, molecules of calcium monofluoride are slowed and therefore cooled when they absorb photons from a laser. You're eating all the cakes. Is it good?
It's not bad.
Okay.
It's here and I'm eating it.
No, I want you to eat the cakes.
As my dad used to say, I'm eating it. All right.
I'm eating it. But only so much cooling is possible with this method. To go beyond that, that limit is called the Doppler limit. The researchers adapted a method used for cooling atoms known as the Sisyphus cooling. Two lasers pointed at one each other create an electromagnetic field that acts like an endless hill that the molecule must climb, therefore sapping its energy and heat. With these two techniques, the molecules reach a frigid 50 millionths of a degree above absolute zero. It's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy science.
Which means they also had to build some sort of device to measure that.
Yeah, and I have no idea.
Wow. That's crazy. So going from cold to hot, Mark, it's not your imagination, but Oregon summers are getting hotter. The 2017 summer is part of a larger trend in the Pacific Northwest, and the trademark moderate summer temperatures are indeed becoming hotter and drier. In a January 2017 report by the Oregon State University's Oregon Climate Change Research Institute, since 1895, Oregon's temperature has warmed by a little more than 2 degrees, and much of that has occurred in recent decades, with a huge warming trend starting in the 1970s. With nearly a month to go, this summer is the third hottest on record. 2015, 2009, and 2017. 2017 right now is a tie with 2014 and 2004. The point of all that being that our four hottest ones aren't spread out anymore. That used to be like the hottest ones were kind of randomly spread out over the last century, and now they're all happening within the last 10 years. Also not helping is that the nighttime lows aren't getting as low. So our temperatures start higher, and then it, and it's not just a case of urbanization, they call it. It's not just getting like warmer in the cities. They put sensors all around Oregon, and they came up with the same thing. So it's also the driest in 14 years. And even though last winter was so hellish, it was not all that cold. There was just a lot of snow, I think, is why everybody kind of remembers that one. But winters have been getting warmer as well. So we will see. But it says by the 2050s, it will be two to 5 degrees warmer than it is now. Huh. So there we have it.
Vote Republican.
I don't have my slide whistle. I'll just eat some more cake.
Let them eat cake.
So the World Clown Association has issued a press release.
I'm going to put my cake down.
The WCA, as they're known.
Everyone knows the...
So they've issued a press release regarding the movie It, because it's giving clouds a bad name.
Yes, the movie coming out based on Stephen King's classic, I believe, 1985 novel It, which I didn't. Did you watch the miniseries at all?
Brief, like not really.
Not really.
I think I maybe watched one episode.
I think I might have started way later, but I think it's either It or Misery, I think, is the book that I've read the most. It's not my favorite book, but just the one that I read the most. And I read It like 5 or 6 times. I think I picked it up in junior high. I picked up, what was it? One of the Stephen King books that I think wasn't even a good one. And my mom found it. It was in junior high. And so I must've found it at a garage sale or something. So that was taken away. So then I just went to get some more. And I remember getting It and reading that a bunch of times.
Replaced it with some Anne Rice film books.
Yes. Some Left Behind novels were put in its place. No, but I've read It a bunch of times, and it's really, Stephen King does that thing where at the end it gets a little too like mystical, and like it kind of falls apart at the end, but looks like this new movie is really going to be cool.
So we at the World Clown Association are proponents of positive family-friendly entertainment. We believe the art of clown is something to be treasured and enjoyed by
the audience. Of clown?
The art of clown is something to be treasured and enjoyed by audiences. Audiences, apostrophe S.
They worldwide. Were typing this with comically large gloves on. I do love, though, when clown or clowning is used as a verb, because it is in their industry, that clowning is the profession of clowning. He was clowning for them.
Just as a haunted house event may have a doctor wearing wearing surgical gear, carrying a bloody chainsaw, people need to understand that that character is not a real doctor. He is a person portraying an evil character in order to scare people. In the same way, people dressed as horror clowns are not, quote, real clowns, unquote. They are taking something innocent and wholesome and perverting it to create fear in their audience. And it goes on. And
what was her name? I'm assuming it's a her. Or is it just a statement from the WCA?
It is the official statement from the WCA.
I wonder if they have an internal PR person that did that, or if they had to hire out somebody's freelance job was writing the World Clown Association.
That's one person in the office who has like 17 jobs. Yeah. So that's that WCA news.
Nice. Well, this next story was super long. I found it in a in a British newspaper. I think the chocolate brownie is coming back to get me. And I cut most of it out because I think it typifies most of the science story that goes around. So the headline is "Low Fat Diet Can Kill You," major study shows. And the leader headline is "Low Fat Diet Could Raise the Risk of Early Death Almost by 1/4," a major study has found. So it goes on to talk about this study, and it's mostly about people that have followed those diets where they cut out one major thing and how that's bad. And so I took the rest of it because it basically all boils down to you can eat a little bit of everything. And that's, I think, over and over. Oh, our light just fell. Over and over, I think what they're finding is like that is the key to health, is just to have a reasonable amount of everything for balance. And so it was crazy to see a really, really long article that basically says that same thing. But then, of course, they go with that same "low fat diet can kill you," a major study says. So I skipped most of that. Now, I know most of you are asking, why don't we do more stories about libraries? Well, today is your lucky day because I have three stories about libraries. The first one is how to stream thousands of movies free using your library card. So right now, more than 200 public library systems in the United States have teamed up with a streaming platform called Canopy, with a K, to bring some 30,000 movies to library cardholders free of charge. Their emphasis on documentaries and international films, all of which can be streamed on your computer through a Roku or an iOS and Android phone app. So each library imposes its own limit to the number of free movies you can watch and per month and all that. Once they've registered with Canopy, viewers can keep track of all of that. Canopy has an extensive library of classic films from silent era shorts to groundbreaking international features. It doesn't have many options for the Hollywood blockbuster stuff, but tons of international and old documentaries and stuff like that. So do check out if your library does that.
Nice. Our public library system is actually really phenomenal.
It is. And I don't use it enough, but they're making it so easy now to, I mean, do stuff like this and take advantage of stuff like this. But yeah, it's really neat. And they're really, especially for people with disabilities and accessibility problems, that it's just really great. So check out your local library.
I love it.
The DC library is hiding provocative books around its city as kind of a game to promote Banned Book Month. So if you are a listener in the DC area, they hid six copies of six incendiary novels around the city for residents to find. And it's a scavenger hunt for the celebration of the nationally observed Banned Book Week, which is September 24 through 30. Its theme is Texts Against Tyranny, and the Foundation's contest features books that not only are about repressive societies, but themselves are often challenged or banned in the library. So 600 copies of six novels, which are Fahrenheit 451, The Handmaid's Tale, Parable of the Sower, The Giver, We, and Who Fears Death. I've only heard of the first two of those, are scattered around 50 locations, and they're wrapped in special covers featuring quotes. And if you collect them all, it makes a whole picture and you get a little prize. So if you are in DC, tune into 88.5 FM every weekday for your clue about where the next thing is.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
And the British Library, not to be outdone by that, is releasing 570 pages of Leonardo da Vinci's manuscript. So it was a collaboration between the British Library and Microsoft titled Turning the Pages 2.0, made 570 copies of Leonardo da Vinci's Codex Arundel available for free online. There's hundreds of digitized pages of like airplanes, helicopters, parachutes, submarines, automobiles, centuries before they were developed And during his lifetime, parts of his ideas and reflections were recorded in his notebooks. Some of them have been lost over the centuries, and those that remain have become rare objects until now. The process of digitization began in 2017, and today it's possible to turn the pages of all those books right from your phone. So that is
10 years ago in 2007.
Oh, yeah, that's when they started.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a really neat project, too.
That's awesome. I really think that, like, this next generation is going to have incredible access to things that I think of, like, with 3D printing and 3D models that the Smithsonian is digitizing. Like, they took the death mask, or actually not the death mask, a face mask that they made of Abraham Lincoln. So they did plaster on his face and with nose holes, you know, so he could breathe during the process.
Right.
And they made a cast of his face. They now have digitized that as a 3D model.
I don't like
that
it.
That then you can 3D print.
I don't like
and
it.
So at home, you can make your own Abraham Lincoln face.
That's
anatomically accurate.
That is just, I don't like it. Everyone in the future is going to look like Princess Leia at the end of Rogue One. just sort of off and perfect. Staring blankly into space. Yeah, with perfect flawless rose skin. It's been, when did that movie come out? Last Christmas. And I still don't really hear people talking about how it's not that good. So maybe it's just me. But I loved The Force Awakens, so I was like on board for the new movies, but I just did not like Rogue One at all. That was so dumb. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, that's on my third podcast coming out, all about how I hated Rogue One. I saw in the news come up a lot this week about Frankfurt evacuating 65,000 people to defuse World War II bombs. So a bomb disposal experts in Frankfurt successfully defused that massive unexploded bomb from World War II. The news is greeting to spontaneous applause. Many of the residents are now awaiting permissions to return from their home. So the evacuation Sunday morning was the biggest in post-war German history, involving hundreds of officials. Police checked every designated house and all that. The evacuation included hospitals, nursing home, and the central bank. So there was an uncontrolled... fire and police chiefs in the city warned that an uncontrolled explosion of the HC-4000 bomb would be powerful enough to flatten an entire street. So a similar evacuation took place on Saturday in Koblenz, which is 68 miles west of Frankfurt. All of a sudden, your little Mark Middleton has his cursor here in our shared document.
Oh, sorry. I was reading it along.
So I think, obviously, one of the things that we take for granted in America is that we don't ever live in the places that we pick all our... that we go to fight all of our wars in. And obviously, in Europe and England is a huge problem with mines and people losing limbs for that. But there's a list here of just in the recent years... of World War II bombs recently discovered in Germany. So in June 2010, three people were killed during an operation to defuse a bomb. 2011, 45,000 people were evacuated. 2012, someone was killed when their digger hit the an unexploded bomb. 2015, 20,000 people in Cologne forced to evacuate. And 2016, 50,000 people had to evacuate. So that is I didn't know there was like large scale evacuations like that done.
I hadn't heard
on a
that
regular
either.
Basis.
I hadn't heard that either. I did see an article today, or it was actually a Reddit post to ask Reddit, to the historians of Reddit, if those bombs went off and killed somebody, would they be considered a casualty of World War II?
Oh, interesting.
And there wasn't a definitive answer because different organizations like UNICEF and NATO and have different definitions of casualties of war. And so depending on which organization and what specifically the ordinance was and what caused the detonation of it and who the person was, it like has all of these really interesting caveats of like, you could make a case for them being a casualty of war in this scenario,
yeah.
But not in this organization. They wouldn't defy the parents.
That is an interesting question, though. It's kind of like time traveling war. Like
right.
You send a bomb and it doesn't hit its target for 86 years.
Right. Totally.
Wow. What a
what
time,
a time to be alive.
So that's all of the news I had. I did want to talk a little bit about what I did this weekend. I had a super fun weekend.
Yes.
I went with my parents to Tillamook, Oregon, which is over on the course on the coast, where they also have the Tillamook Cheese Factory. And because of a story on our very own podcast from Brian the Unipiper, we went on what's called the Oregon Coast Rail Riders, which is those special four-seat recumbent bikes that fit over the railroad tracks, and went on a two-hour, 12-mile round trip trip down the rail line through Tillamook and then down to whatever is 6 miles south of that.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And it was really, really neat. So each, yeah, you're with a bunch of other people, but you're each in your little four-person car and you're not attached to each other, so you can have space and stuff like that. And we ended up going, since it was me and my mom and dad, there was three of us, and since there was an open seat, one of the guides came with us, or the guy who runs it, actually. And it was really neat to have him, because he was talking all about the history and all about, you know, the stuff that we were seeing and pointing out stuff that was really neat to see. And I might edit this down later, I'm not sure, but I recorded a little bit of him talking about the specific rail line we were on. So what you'll hear is we're actually pedaling down the tracks as we're talking about this. He was talking a little bit about the trip. So here you go. And the guy... the guy was totally. Do you remember who Ty Pennington is? He was the handyman type for all of those home makeover shows and
the reveal. The family went away for 3 days.
Yeah,
and
so
we've
imagine
given them a new home.
Imagine a late 20s version of him was our guide to this, and he was a guy that like lives half the year in Mammoth. Him and his wife as helping out with the ski resort, and then they're up here and doing this, and he's going to take over this. So he's kind of this not a granola type, but just that
outdoor activities.
Yeah, he's like spent a year in Taiwan teaching English, that type of thing. So that's who this is talking.
Too much. So tell me about this stretch of rail again.
So this stretch of rail, it's 6 miles long that we do.
I think we're going downhill suddenly.
It goes from Bay City, Oregon, down to Tillamook. And we just crossed Highway 6. And right in downtown Tillamook is where we turn around.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually, this stretch that we're on right now is the backside of the Kilchis Point Nature Reserve.
Oh, okay.
The Kilchis Point Preserve.
I say, okay, acting like I'd ever heard that word before. But it was a really cool, I think it was $20 per person to go on, but it's a 2 hour trip. And even for people, like I haven't ridden a bike in forever, but because they're kind of the recumbent bikes, I mean, you pedal like it's a single gear thing, so it's you pedal to move, but there's four of you, and so it was really neat. You got a little exercise, and there was parts where you just opened up into a big field and just going over
That's
these trestle
really cool.
bridges and over rivers. So check them out. I think they're at ocrailriders.com, and they are fill up, they're almost done with their season. They end their season in October, I think. So but he did say, and not to dwell on it, but when he first sat down and was kind of talking about, you know, some of the bridges and stuff. So there's three bridges along that line that are really, really old. They were built in either the end of 1894, and there's a couple of them that were built in 1908 in New York. They were shipped from New York to Sacramento and used there for years and years and years until California sold them to Oregon. So those are three of those on their strip, and just solid steel, you know, just going nowhere bridges. I lost the thread. Oh, so the guy was telling us about him, and I could tell that he was workshopping a bit.
Okay.
And I didn't understand. And so, you know, I politely laughed or whatever. And so later on the trip, when he was addressing everyone else, because whenever we came to a road crossing, they had to jump out and hold signs. Once at one of the ones, we did the gate. He pushed the button. And there's just, I mean, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but like the guy just walked up to the little junction box on the corner and like opened an unsecure panel and pressed a button, and that's what made those things go up and down. So I guess
you can do that too.
I guess we can do that too. But we were stopped there, and then he addressed the crowd. So he was talking about these bridges, and he said, we got the bridges from California when California was facing a debt crisis. Now, we still have the bridges, so you do the math. Am I missing something? California went into a debt crisis and sold the bridges off. We still have the bridges, so you do the math.
So
I wasn't missing something obvious then.
No.
That was my fear.
Did they...
But it was the, so you do the math, that like any thread that I was following fell apart because I found no math in what he already had said. So I didn't know what pieces of that puzzle I was trying to put together.
I've done the math. The math checks out? I don't know.
So yeah, I gave him a polite laugh and so, but I thought it was funny that he brought it back and like it was good enough to him.
You do the math.
As the trip joke, like you do the submarine tours and like you don't get a lot of chances for Joe. You gotta be on your joke
laser
game.
Focused. Oh,
so
yeah.
He could use a little help on that front. So anyway, it was a super cool experience, and I recommend it to anyone that would like to. And a perfect day trip. We just went over there for the day, stood in line in traffic, which is basically one car at a time all the way from downtown Portland down to 26 out to the coast.
I don't know what was going on. So
you guys went.
We went down to the coast on Friday.
To what part?
North. So just okay. North of Long Beach.
Okay.
To a town called Ocean Park.
Okay.
Yeah, Ocean Park is next to like Oysterville and stuff.
Oysterville
is awesome. And on our way back, we came back on Sunday of Labor Day weekend, so we thought there wouldn't be much traffic.
Yeah.
Going into Astoria from Portland from Highway 30, there was at least 5 to 8 miles of traffic.
Wow.
It just kept going again. And then there wasn't an accident or anything. It was just like, it was hot in Portland and nice in Astoria.
Away.
Let's just go to the coast.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
It was great. Yeah, it was perfect weather over there. It was like 75, yeah. A little breezy.
It was beautiful. Cool. Well, today I thought we would talk about non-natural meats.
And my joke when you brought that up earlier was like hot dogs?
Kind of like hot dogs,
kind of
actually.
Like hot dogs.
So the first thing that we're going to talk about is surimi. And surimi is the ocean equivalent of the hot dog. And
okay.
So, surimi, you have probably...
S-U-R-A-M-I?
S-U-R-I-M-I.
I-M-I, okay.
Surimi. And you know this as imitation crab.
Oh, crab with a K.
Crab with a K. And so the... basically, that is the equivalent of a hot dog. Basically, they take different... scrub fish, actually, in the...
That's sad for them.
I know.
Oh, the humans have finally named us. What is it?
Scrub fish.
I mean, it's no blobfish, which I first feel the worst for. Because whenever they take it out on land,
to his name.
It deflates and like looks all sad. And like, your name is the blobfish.
Oh, I just want to love you. So... the process was refined in the 1960s, in 1969, to revitalize Japan's fish industry and to make use of what they considered to be fodder fish. And so they were just the dregs of fish.
Okay, fodder.
I barely knew her.
And so Alaskan pollock is the most common, but they also use cod and big-eyed croaker and... Big eyes and milkfish.
That's my nickname for you from now on. Big eyed croaker.
Big eyed croaker. Big eyes, milkfish, swordfish, tilapia.
Swordfish. You'd think swordfish would be fancier. I guess, but if you're just using the leavings,
right.
Like the scraps of it.
Exactly. And so they take all of that, they blend it into a paste, and they extrude it into what end up being, you know, meat-like substances. And then
is
add
that
color, and
I would imagine
you've got some crab.
I would imagine, like, when you go get your Filet-O-Fish or whatever, unless it is designated, and they probably are at this point, you know, 100% tilapia. I would assume that's what the Filet-O-Fish, but I would guess unless it says that specifically, it is kind of hose meat.
Anything, yeah.
Right.
It is
like like chicken patties. It's
right.
Chicken esque in the style of chicken flavored.
Chickish. and so that's not exactly a meat alternative or an unmeat, because it is just kind of meat repurposed, like a
right,
hot dog.
Right.
And so,
oh, that reminds me. Sorry. Yeah, speaking of meat, one thing we did see in Tillamook when you drive in, there's a bigger truck trailer.
Yeah.
And a modular little trailer, and both of them are beef jerky outlets.
Oh, I did. You sent me that picture.
I was so excited about the beef jerky outlet. What a time.
That's
but then somebody pointed out, yeah, it's in dairy country, and so after we're done with milk, they're done with... there's nothing left to do with the cow except go to the jerky outlet.
Make jerky.
Anyway, sorry.
And so they use that and produce 2 to 3% of the world's fishery supply is used for this processed fish-like product.
Mm, that's not a lot.
Yeah, not a super lot.
Yeah.
And it saves a lot of waste. Is like the hot dogs, you get
right.
to use all of the fish.
Use all of the buffalo.
Exactly. And so it's expanding worldwide as well. Lithuania, Vietnam, Chile, France, and Malaysia.
Is that the only one you're going to do the ethnic accent for? Not Thailand?
Thailand?
Didn't you say?
I'm
right,
sure
they
have
an accent.
How would I say Thailand?
Potato chips!
How would I say Thailand?
I don't know, with an accent.
Chile.
And Mexico.
So the process, I've got the six steps of the process, but it's blending meat and
right.
it's pretty straightforward.
Which is interesting because they must, I mean, it's not, I feel like at the end of it, they have to add some texture back because it's not a paste texture. It's still a quote unquote flaky, fishy
right
kind
and
of
so
thing.
Kind of as it coagulates they coagulate it into strips that simulate that muscle
and
texture
then
and then layer it back in. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I know. So speaking of texture, let's talk about the next one, which is cultured meat. So cultured meat is it's also been called synthetic meat, cell cultured meat, clean meat, vat meat, lab-grown meat, and in vitro meat. So
that last one,
in vitro meat,
that sounds threatening somehow. Like we'll hear that a lot in newscasts of the future.
We absolutely will. So cultured meat is lab-grown meat. So it's incidentally, it's not necessarily genetically modified. What they do is they take it takes three components to make this to make fake. It's not fake meat either. It's real meat, but it's lab grown meat. So you need starter cells, a growth medium, and scaffolding cells. So starter cells are basically muscle stem cells, or stem cells that are the muscle cells. Stem cells are the ones that don't yet have a specific task to do or specific thing. They're very flexible and many times are used for the body, use them to rebuild failed muscle. So if you've got a muscle tear, it'll kind of send stem cells to that area to do some repair work. And so they serve a specific purpose in our bodies, but they're also really, they produce really fast and they're the most flexible. So they take these muscle cells and some fat cells and they put them into a culture that has all the right amino acids and right nutrients, and it's called a bioreactor. And so they put it into a bioreactor
that's boring.
Basically a big barrel with some whisks in it that keep everything at the right temperature and right pressure and composition and everything. And they start to build little the cells go in there and they reproduce and divide and divide and divide. And so with just a handful of starter cells, you can make 50 trillion duplicates of those starter cells. And because they weren't genetically modified, they came from beef,
right,
or they came from chicken. They came from the original source. They're not genetically modified or artificial. They're just grown in a lab.
And so you can have perfect consistency.
Perfect consistency. Perfect, exactly the type of cell you chicken. Want. And so the scaffolding cells are the hard part that they're really trying to nail right now. There's a company called Hampton Creek that is a startup that is spending tons and tons of money in this. So it's a Silicon Valley startup. It's big on plant-based foods, but admits that it's not realistic to get most customers to choose veggie burgers over beef. So they're taking a different approach. They are using animal proteins made without harming animals. And so they are making animal cells in the lab without using animals. And so they
now vegetarians can eat beef.
That's the big moral dilemma,
yeah,
in front of them. Like, well, why are you not eating beef? Is it my health, or is it more of a I don't like the cruelty of animals?
Ideology,
right? And if it's the ideology, you go, I want more of this,
right?
Because this, by investing in this, you will actually reduce animal cruelty,
right?
If we shift away from there.
Wow.
And so eat beef to be a better vegetarian or a better vegan. Yes.
Wow.
Suitable muscle cells are proliferated on a carrier called a scaffold in the presence of a culture medium in a bioreactor. So they create microfibers that the muscle cells build on and create the right texture in the fat cells. Instead of just a amorphous glob, you want a muscle that feels like meat,
right,
you know, and creates the rib and whatever. And so this biomedical firm, this startup called Hampton Creek, is working at creating that edible, just the right of solubility scaffolding media that holds the muscle cells in place while they are growing in the culture. And this is done by, you know, ligaments and connective tissue and everything in our bodies. And so they are trying to mimic or re-engineer that,
yeah,
in
because,
the same way.
Because beef and steak taste different, whether it's a ribeye or a T-bone, having that bone and connective tissue and all,
yep,
that in there is part of the,
exactly,
flavor and experience. And
exactly. And
nobody
so,
wants 3D printed baby back ribs.
Right. So 3D printing is the third thing that we're going to talk about. We haven't yet talked about 3D printing. So 3D printing is basically taking either of these techniques and applying them into a dispensing unit that you can print with. And so if you take this substrate of meat.
Mom, we're at a substrate.
Exactly. So if you take this substrate, you can create a lattice looking hamburger, or you can create a
things wouldn't even need to look like food, because,
right,
it would just be that food in different shape.
Exactly. And so you can create them like with basically meat paste that's already been processed, and you can also create it with substrate that needs to grow. And so part of this in vitro meat process could be.
In vitro meat is the worst.
I know. I picked that one because I knew you had the biggest freak out to it. But cultured meat, part of the 3D printing might be the scaffolding cells. And
okay,
so you could create a really intricate scaffolding system that the meat cells are growing on using some micro 3D printing techniques and build the perfect tasting thing that right. is better for you. You know, it has less, you know, they're injecting different vitamins into it and removing bad things. And so creating the perfect food that tastes perfectly and doesn't impact the environment, and doesn't, cause cruelty to animals, and makes the world a better place, and just makes a few oligarchs at the top super mega rich.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the American way. It was interesting. I was talking, my mom and dad were here, like I said, we were they just started cutting the corn in the field by my house, and I was telling you about how the combines now can pick the ear of corn right off the stalk and put that in one truck and just mulch the rest of the plant, so that when the dump truck drives away, it is just full of just single ears of corn ready to like go to the market from the field. And we were talking about how farming and all those things are, there's not going to be jobs left. I mean, that second truck, which was just there to catch all of the ears of corn, easily can be done by a robot that just, cause it's just following the truck next to it. They already have all this awesome GPS, stuff that goes into planting tractors and plowing tractors that, and robotic planters that are able to be so efficient with the planting, it saves them like half the cost on fertilizer and overrun and all that stuff because of the precision of the planting. And talking about the no jobs for anyone in the future and that idea of universal income, because we have to think about something.
We have to.
And how that's all going to work. And
I just think, as I'm just thinking about jobs that are out there, jobs that are available, like daydreaming about, you know, what if I left my current position and wanted to go into another industry? There's so many companies who have swooped in and purchased the entire industry in things that makes it really, like Amazon, $9 out of $10 spent on the web in e-commerce are spent on Amazon.
Wow.
9 out of 10.
Oh, did you see my new apron?
No.
You haven't? Oh my gosh. So I I finally was like, it's been almost a year since I've even bought clothes, stock, anything for myself. Right. And I had, I think it was $40, and I was like, and I'm going to make some Blackberry Jam coming up, and I didn't have any aprons and making it, it's a mess and blah blah blah. And so I found that awesome denim cotton work apron, and so I ordered that off of Amazon. And then the next day somebody gave me a gift certificate, and I was like, dang it. So
thank you.
Now I have to think of something else to order off of Amazon. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But anyway, I forgot what I was going. I just wanted to talk about my apron again.
$9 out of $10 is spent on Amazon. And you were one of those nine.
And I was one. Oh, man. I've become what I've hated about. What is that Batman? That bad one. You, you either die a hero or live long enough to watch yourself become the villain. And I have watched myself become the villain. I've fallen just like everyone else. It was delightful to get a package in the mail, though. I do say that.
Hmm. We love it. Yeah. And so, Surimi, cultured meat, 3D printed meat. Like, I think that there's going to be a lot of hunger solution, like hunger problems that are solved with cultured meat, because you don't have to have a dairy with hundreds of cattle that need to be fed. You just need starter cells and chemicals. And so you can go into a lab and using the starter cells start growing meat, and it takes days and weeks, and you get a high quality product that at some point will surpass the quality of farm grown beef. Wow. You know, it will just be refined, you know,
and that's crazy
like we get with CGI of computer graphics. I think there will be a ramp up to like perfection, and then the next ramp will be adding the right imperfections to fool your brain into thinking that it's real.
To getting over that uncanny valley of your brain looking at Princess Leia is shouting. That is the dumbest looking thing I've ever seen. Why is no one else in this whole theater saying anything about this? Oh, just me that notices that? Anyway. So to overcome that taste wise is what
exactly
you're saying,
and there there's going to be waves
we'll have
of evolution.
We'll have to have special meat printers that somehow torture young cow stem cells in the dark to become our veal.
You don't move. You can't even turn around. You
they
just
can't
stay
turn
right
the
there.
Lights on in that. In
you
that
can't
one.
Turn the lights on at all.
That was really neat. You go so on that Rail Riders thing. You go on the backside of. The Tillamook Cheese Factory, which is kind of cool to see the factory from the other side. But then there's a couple of really, really large dairies that you go on the backside of and over this cool trellis bridge. And the guy, our Ty Pennington guy on the way back was like, you guys seem like you're cool. And I don't usually tell people this, but if you look right at this spot when we're coming around the corner, you can see the dead animal pile at the dairy, which, you know, dairies have losses just like everyone else. And you drag them to a pile, then animal control comes and gets them, blah, blah, blah. But sure enough, he's like, hey, look over there. There's all the dead cows in the sun right next to the cheese factory. Oh, and then so there's another place down the road called the French something or their cheese factory. It was a place that sells an old barn looking thing. And so we went there for some ice cream and cheese samples. They get all their cheese from Wisconsin. We're like, oh, so where is your facility? They're like, oh, we just get our cheese from Wisconsin, which I felt was cheating right next to the Tillamook cheese factory. But they had in their parking lot, which was just a big, huge kind of empty gravel lot, they had two electric car outlets, one just a regular one, and then they had a Tesla one right next to it. So a Tesla plug-in thing right next to this vintage looking old barn with
buy local.
Yeah.
Don't use their electricity. Shams.
So anyway.
Huh.
Nice. Well, yeah, it'll be, I mean, stuff like this. And like, even when you talk about GMOs and growing places in different areas so that it's resistant to the things in that area that don't usually allow people to grow, whether it's drought, you know, places with lots of drought or places with certain insects, and being able to modify it at the crop level around it as also just been a huge thing for getting crops around the world to grow. And this sort of sounds like it's the next exciting
wave.
Getting meat discs in the mail from.
Well, you can just download.
Have
the
you downloaded
beef.
That new meat? Oh, dude.
It's amazing.
That is crazy. Well, oh wow, we filled our time. Brian is not with us this week. He's off adventuring, I think. Oh, and I did have this one last thing, which is a visual thing. I got this today, which is my big banner they used that says
Mount Workhoven Trail.
Mount Workhoven Trail, which is the banner they
used.
Let's
see. Hold on. If you go to this camera above my head. Yeah, there you go.
So Mount Workhoven Trail right there. This wonderful vinyl banner. So it was the perfect thing when I wrote the play for the kids camp this summer. They were like, well, we're going to have a big volcano and we're going to name it Mount Workhoven, which was perfect because I got to have a mountain named after me and I didn't have to be the one saying, oh man, can you name that after me? So it was perfect that I got to have it without having to ask for it.
Yes.
Which is the perfect
thing. That's the best.
But thank you for listening to another episode of the Mark and Todd cast. Oh, we didn't do our... I am Todd, and with me as always is Mark. I was also on a programming note. I was on my friend Jason Pollard's podcast, which is called The Well-Adjusted Gamer, that came out this last week. You can find it at WAG Podcast, W-A-G Podcast. And he does a gaming podcast on the Fun Employment Radio Network. And we sat and talked kind of a little bit about my background and what I do. And then I talked about gaming and trying to find games that appeal to me, who doesn't really have a background as a gamer. So it was a really cool conversation and really worth checking out. So you can find that at wagpodcast.com. Do check it out. Other than that, I think that's all we had. I pulled up Nine Inch Nails Closer, the instrumental to Closer from Nine Inch Nails, because whenever we were talking about meats and I just pictured all of the Nine Inch Nails videos of meat hanging from the ceiling and all that. So I will take you guys out with that. Find us at markandtalkcast.com. Drop us a note, subscribe, leave a review, and we will see you guys as I vamp to skip this ad next time.
There you go.
These things get less good the longer they sit out. All right.